Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to today's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me is Joe Healy, and we have both made it to Omaha. We are here for the College World Series, of course, and as we record this on Thursday, media day / practice day is wrapping up. By the time you're listening to this on Friday, we will have arrived at game day for the start of the College World Series. I mentioned on the last episode that the schedule is a little condensed. So yes, this year the games start on Friday, not Saturday. So we are fast approaching the start of the event that they call the greatest show on dirt, Joe. So we're happy to be in Omaha, and we're excited to be in Omaha, and looking forward to a great couple of weeks of college baseball.
Ready or not, Omaha, Nebraska.
I wonder whether you might do that or this town, this city, this town.
That one is not as conducive to my vocal range, to be honest with you. I did consider it's lower energy, so it's hard to like pull off as like in the bit that I just did. But the Omaha, somewhere in Middle America, which
there's another one. Because that's Bruce, right?
That's the Counting Crows.
Oh, that's Counting Crows. That was the one I was trying to think of. Was Counting Crows.
Yeah, it's not quite the vibe. That one doesn't get played as much at the CWS. You hear a lot of the other previously mentioned songs here. The Counting Crows one does get played, just played a little less. It's not quite the party vibe you're looking for necessarily.
It's frankly the best of the bunch. Like, I no disrespect to OAR, which like ESPN commissioned to write this town for this event, and like OAR had good songs back in the day. Shout out to the Ohio band, but like I disrespect to Bullet for Soup. It's fine.
Yeah, well, I mean, that song was a contrivance too. I think I read up on that one time that was kind of, I don't know who commissioned it or what it was for, but it was. I mean, it is very overtly written about the College World Series. So like, I assume someone was involved in saying, hey, Bowling for Soup, would you like to make a quick buck? Here's a catchy little tune we'd like, or I guess they wrote it, but I mean, like, we'd like a catchy little tune. And that's what they spit out, which I know you don't like it. I'm not saying it's a good song. I do kind of like that song because I think it probably has some sort of emotional appeal to me that I'm not like totally wasn't aware of until I started, you know, hearing it in the ballpark when I started coming to cover games at Omaha. So that's probably mostly what's happening there. But I think we can agree on the OAR song. That one's just, I think that's just the champion all around in terms of quality of the song and also having the right vibe you're looking for.
I mean, ESPN has been using that as the bumper music for the College World Series for legitimately, I believe it's 10 years now. So like that does speak to the quality of the work.
And you might not hear like the lyrics as much, but you definitely do hear the down, 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 like the little, you know, the guitar there. You don't, because sometimes, yeah, it's just like bumper music without the lyrics. And like, so yeah, you've probably heard that more than you think, even if you didn't know it was that.
Yeah, I mean, in Arizona, as recently as 2016, like cut a music video with it. Now, I mean, that Arizona team was into doing stuff like that, like into like air guitar kind of deals for, I can't think of the technical term for that, for songs. And ESPN got Arizona to do that at 16, but like as recently as that, like they were still messing around doing stuff with it beyond just playing it. So anyway, yeah, College World Series, get ready for it. You're welcome, ESPN.
A lot of music. Like
ESPN, not a sponsor, but could be.
Yes. Yes, theoretically, yes.
In case they need to go on a college baseball podcast and tell you to watch the College World Series, I'll do that ad read. It's fine.
Yeah, I like the idea that someone listening is like, what? What's this week? I do miss the, like, I'm sure there are commercials that still run, like, because, but it's just because I watch less, you know, when we're kids, we just watch, well, not everybody, but I, anyway, watched like a lot of like TV as a kid, like Sports Center on a loop in the mornings and in the evenings and yada, yada, yada. I know a lot of sports kids have had a similar upbringing. So you're just like very aware of the commercials that run, and they would start running the, what I call the ping commercials, like 3 or 4 weeks before the CWS. And it was just like a super cut of like a bunch of like hitters yes. hitting the ball. And it's like ping, 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 ping. Cause it's back in the days of the real loud ping bats. And I'm sure commercials run now, but like, I do feel like that was a specific brand of commercial that I miss. It really leaned into the college baseball of it all.
Yeah. I mean, you also don't watch linear TV as much. So like, I feel like the commercials that you see on when you're watching on the app versus when you're watching linearly probably yeah. a little different.
Right. Yeah. 100%.
All right. So we're here. There are 8 teams here for now. By the end of Monday, we'll have said goodbye to a couple teams. So, I mean, this whole thing starts to happen very fast. It's happening even faster this year, as I've mentioned a couple times now. They've changed the format to condense it a little bit, remove some off days, and all of that is in service of getting the finals to start on a weekend rather than on a Monday, and in hopes of drawing even more fans to the event and just making it generally easier for fans to attend. And while in theory, like, I like that for the fans, and I hope everyone who does get to attend enjoys that aspect of it. Like, I don't love the way that this breaks, for me at least. And I'll be interested to see how players feel about it, how coaches feel about it, how they manage slightly differently, because they have removed some off days to make it happen. And for that matter, Joe, I just realized this yesterday. There's a chance the College World Series ends on Sunday afternoon, not even Sunday night, but the second game of the finals is scheduled for like 2:00 Eastern on Sunday.
I did not realize that either. I'm going to be honest with you. That'd be a real throwback to back when the championship, back in the old days before it was a pre 2003, because 2003 was the start of the best of three championship, you know, pre 2003, it was a single championship game, which of course we don't need to fully relitigate, but you know, a team could lose once in the championship game to a team that had already lost, and they, you know, the team that won that game was the champion. Anyway, that used to be on the afternoons on CBS. And so it was, that will be a little bit of a throwback if it does end that way. That's, I'm just getting this news right now.
Excuse me.
Still, I mean, yeah, 2:00 local out here. Yes. So
yeah, that it was 2:00 was the time.
Yeah. That's interesting. Like I really did not know that. I generally kind of, I think most people I talk to now, I've not talked to a lot of coaches about this, so I think that's probably part of the difference here, but most people I talk to have positive things generally to say about this format. And I think it's just because there's less kind of like dead time. You know, we've gotten rid of the days where it's just one game at 6:00, and we've gotten rid of the full if necessary day where it's like we could have 0 games, 1 game, or 2 game, and it all depends on how it plays out.
I think that is still here. What they did do away with is the 1 games, but the full if necessary day does.
Is that, am I reading it wrong? I must be reading it wrong.
I think that exists on Friday.
I just kind of show up to the park and like, well, you know,
I mean,
like,
100% yes, that is what we do.
Whatever 2 teams they put in front of me, it's like, okay, here we go. Like they could try to sneak somebody else in here. Like they could put East Carolina in the field and I'd be like, okay, well, I guess they must have earned it somehow. Like, okay, you know.
The one question I have about the condensing of this format is what it's going to mean if/when it rains. You know, the other format, like the previous format with those single game days in the middle of the first week, the elimination games being solo events, did give them a buffer if rain really messed with the schedule. It made it easy to move games around. They just lost the ability to do that in many respects. So I will be curious to see. And like right now, the weather just looks to be hot. It doesn't look to be like a particularly stormy CWS, but you know, knock on wood on that, you know, we'll just have to see. But at some point, that's going to come to bear, whether that's this year, next year, or 2 years down the line. They're going to have to deal with that. And I'll just be curious to see how that plays out. But I mean, obviously that's something that they've thought about it and worked through and decided it's worth the risk or whatever.
I did. You're correct. Not that I doubted it, but you are correct. The Thursday is a full, like, you know, if necessary day where we have one or two.
Friday's the off day.
Friday's a scheduled off day. So we could also theoretically have 2 days of just no games, which, like,
that was true in the old format too. There's no way around that as long as we're playing double elimination and want to give teams a day up between the end of the brackets and the start of the finals.
Yeah. So yeah, it does present a different set of circumstances. Like I said, most of the feedback I've gotten has been pretty positive, but we're ultimately, that's the thing about when you try to do this kind of stuff is that you don't really know you can kind of foresee some of the consequences of it, but you can't fully foresee that until you just try it. And so that's where we are.
I do think that this will test depth a little bit more, and teams that are reliant on like one reliever, like it does test them in a different way. So for folks out there that like more complete teams winning it or whatever, more depth on the mound to win the World Series. Like I do think that this is going to force that a little bit more. But again, we'll see how that plays out, not just this year, but in years to come, because 1 year is not necessarily going to be enough to really see how that affects things. Okay, so the field, in case you haven't gotten it by now, in the one bracket, you've got Notre Dame and Texas. That's the night game on Friday. The first game is Texas A&M and Oklahoma. The other bracket starts with Stanford and Arkansas on Saturday. Ole Miss and Auburn is the night game. Those are four current SEC schools and two future SEC schools. They are all major conference schools. You know, they're all coming from four conferences, one from the PAC, one from the ACC, two from the Big 12, future SEC, and four from the SEC. This is all just part of a continuing trend that the SEC puts multiple teams, usually as many as three or four, in the Omaha field. There hasn't been a mid-major here since 2017, and it was Fullerton that year, and so you can like consider Fullerton whatever you want. Like in some respects, we haven't had like a true like new mid-major since Coastal won in 2016, an event that many people said was going to show that like mid-majors could still win in college baseball and show mid-majors across the country that with some investment like Coastal made, that could be you. And instead, what we've gotten is nothing but powerhouses ever since. And there's nothing inherently wrong with that, but I do kind of miss and have missed for the last few years having more of a true Cinderella story here right now. I mean, you're looking at like Notre Dame returning for the first time in 20 years, but like, and they're a Northern school, but look, they play in the ACC and they're Notre Dame. You could look at it as Ole Miss. They were one of the last four teams in the field and now look at them, but like, look, they're Ole Miss. There just isn't really a team you can truly make that Cinderella case for me.
Yeah, the as they always are, Notre Dame, America's sweetheart and a plucky underdog. That's just the role they play.
And both of those teams, agrees, by the way, ranked number one in the Baseball America Top 25 at various times this season. And look, I mean, you can say that we were wrong when we did it, but I don't know. Here they are in Omaha, so maybe we were right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, look, I mean, obviously I'm not going to disagree with the idea of missing some variety here and just kind of the true underdog team here. And I think some of it is, so I think there's kind of two tracks here. One is that I do think it is just a fluke is not quite the right word, but just kind of circumstantial that we haven't had one in a while. It doesn't mean that it's never going to happen again. Like, yes. Okay. Maybe we had a run of them there for a while, you know, Stony Brook and Kent in the same year certainly was fluky, but you know, we had, you know, Santa Barbara getting there the one time, and obviously Coastal broke through and won it all. Like we just had a real run there for a while. And so that was probably just circumstantial on the other end. And we, you know, are kind of, as people are wont to do, you kind of just take that and run with it and think that it's the start of something specific, and maybe it's not any of that. But so I do think there is that. Setting that aside, though, I do think I hear this from people all over college baseball that the gulf that very much exists between this, and this designation does not apply to baseball, but it kind of gets carried over. The difference between Power Five, and you can throw the Big Ten out for baseball if you want to, but the point is the gulf that exists between the Power Five and everybody else in college baseball has only increased and been magnified. And I don't just mean, obviously, that matters in terms of things like television money, like the revenue that trickles down to baseball, even if baseball is further down the totem pole than football and basketball and some other sports and other, in some cases, like just what is still trickling down in those conferences is still so much greater than what trickles down to baseball in other conferences. It's just several orders of magnitude greater. And you see that expressed in the fact. So when people ask me, kind of why that is, or, you know, how we kind of arrived here where some of these mid-major powers that used to be have gotten here. It's just like, well, everyone in the Power Five is committed to baseball now, but you almost can't not be committed to baseball because you're getting resources, you know, as this money trickles down, as these resources trickle down. So that's part of it. I also just think that's where the talent is going. Like I think, and that's part of what I mean when I say the gulf has widened between Power Five and not, is I hear anecdotal stories all the time about a good mid-major program missing out on a player because they wanted to go to a Power Five school. So instead they go to kind of an also ran Power Five school that is going to win less than the quote mid-major school they were going to go to or were being pursued by, but because they want to go to a Power Five school, they go to the Power Five school. And that's all anecdotal, and I don't want to turn that into more than it is, but I hear it enough that I know it's definitely a thing that's out there. And so you add all that up, and I think that's what you get. You combine, yes, probably just some fluky stuff happening in the data, but also I just do think this is a reality that, thanks largely to football, the rich are getting richer and everything else is kind of staying stagnant, largely thanks to the money that is trickling down from TV rights and things of that nature. I think this is kind of the ripple effects of what we're seeing there. You know, even if I can't point to a single, you know, because we don't exactly know, I can't point to a single program and tell you that, hey, you know, 15 years ago, this, you know, this program wouldn't have been able to get here, but now because of the current climate, they're here. I can't be that specific about it, but it is a thing that's happening in the background.
Yeah. And all of this stuff is so tricky. Like, what do budgets mean? Like, better coaching, you know, you can pay your assistants more, like you can build nicer facilities, and these things matter in recruiting, which leads to better players. And, you know, they also matter in development, because if you have better coaches, you'll develop the player better and all the rest of it. But it is all very squishy. It's hard to just pinpoint, like, well, this is happening because of X. At some point though, like the saying in journalism is like, three is a trend, and this is now 3 years without one, four, or 4 years without one, five if you want to count 2017, because Fullerton and their many national titles like don't count as a mid-major for you, and that would be fair, I feel like, to say. But it I don't think it's a positive development, I will say. Like, I think that you can make the argument that it is, because like, you're rewarding teams that are invested the most, and that those teams should be the teams representing college baseball in its biggest stage. And there's merit to that. But we're also talking about, you know, the Power Five is like 60 schools that play baseball, give or take. Like, it's more like 65, whatever it is. There are 300 schools playing Division I baseball, and, you know, so you're excluding 240 of them from this thing annually. And like, a lot of them start the year knowing they're probably not going to Omaha unless the most special year in their program's history happened. Like, I do get that, but it just doesn't seem like this is good, because why do kids want to go to the Power Five? Like, because they see those programs on TV all the time and they want to be a part of that. And so like, this is just reinforcing that cycle. And at some point, like that cycle just becomes impossible to break. I don't think we're too far along to break it yet. I think you're right, Joe, that it could still happen. And we would have to reckon with like, well, what is the American if East Carolina got here? Or, and like a Conference USA team wasn't terribly far away this year. And I mean, they certainly could have broken through last year and they didn't, but it just doesn't. This isn't a sport that needs Cinderellas, like I don't think, but it doesn't hurt to have Stony Brook or Kent State or Santa Barbara show up in Omaha every once in a while. You know, I think that only helps things that a school like that is here.
Yeah, and I think you could look at it a couple of ways too. I think it's easy to make the argument that, hey, you know, we shouldn't worry too much about it because look how close we were, right? East Carolina was in, and again, it's like East Carolina is very much a program like on the line of what we would consider, but you know, because they're not in a Power Five conference for this conversation, that's where you classify them. But they were one win away, and you know, Southern Miss hosted a super and all this stuff, but. And that's true. I'm not dismissing that. That is a solid counter argument to make here. But I will say, especially in the case of like a Southern Miss, like it was very clear. I mean, Ole Miss wasn't hosting because they didn't play well enough in the middle of the season. That's just true. But when those two teams got on the field together, I mean, Southern Miss is a team that has been in the top 25 most of the season, was inside the top 15 for a lot of the second half of the season. And was solidly there the whole time. Nobody really doubted the talent. Like we felt really good about them. There are teams that rank and get pushed up. I mean, Gonzaga was a little like this and we talked about it. Like they kind of kept getting moved up and we were always just kind of like, but it's hard to really get a read. But with Southern Miss, we really didn't have those kind of doubts. But I say all that to say, they get into a super regional against Ole Miss. And sure, like maybe they just didn't play their best ball, but also like Ole Miss was playing well. And Southern Miss didn't have anything for them. Ole Miss's pitchers shut them out. Ole Miss's batters didn't put up a run bonanza, and especially in game two necessarily, but like their offense was effective against good pitchers who have future professional careers ahead of them. And you could just see, it felt like to me, and I didn't watch every second of that super obviously, but it felt like you could see the difference there. I look at a team like Gonzaga, to use Gonzaga as an example. Now, I didn't get to see them play against Virginia Tech, frustratingly, in the Blacksburg Regional because of the way that played out. But that was a team, again, you know, top 15, top 20 all year, pushing the top 10 at various points. And then they got into a regional, and it like, when Gabriel Hughes didn't pitch well and Will Kempner didn't pitch well, it was like, okay, well, this is kind of over. And Power Five teams, like, yes, there are one-sided Power Five teams. We have a whole bunch of them in Omaha, like teams that have flaws. But they just have so many more outlets to win games. And I think you saw in the postseason, the best that mid-majors had to offer, like in the end, when they came up against teams that were just simply more talented than they were more talented than they were, like they just didn't have anything for them. And so I think that's just kind of telling. Like, I think it could still happen. I don't mean to be doom and gloom about this. It can absolutely still happen, but the baseball tournament is pretty much just like the basketball tournament, right? I mean, you still get Butler in a title game. We still get Loyola Chicago in a Final Four. But those teams don't typically win the national title. They can get pretty doggone close. So baseball is more like that versus, well, I think what we thought it might be, if you go back 6-7 years, kind of at the boom of all these mid-majors kind of crashing Omaha, which is, I think we started to kind of convince ourselves, myself included, that baseball was this unicorn where absolutely any good team can win the national title. And maybe I'm building a straw man argument and no one actually thought that, but that's kind of what the feeling was. And, you know, any team can get to Omaha, but getting to Omaha and then winning a national title is a whole different deal. And then getting to Omaha is, of course, like so hard to do. Every coach at the press conference today said exactly that. It's just really hard to get here. But that's no different than getting to a Final Four, getting to an Elite Eight in basketball. College baseball is not special in the way it's able to push mid-majors to the biggest stages. But it's certainly not football, right? Where like,
I don't know. I'm starting to wonder if it is football. Like Cincinnati broke through this year. And that was like the big thing that nobody had broken through to the playoff yet. Cincinnati did it. Cincinnati is on its way to the Big 12, is a massive state university in Ohio. Like, that feels like closer to what the next mid-major breakthrough in baseball is going to be. And now, like I say that, and then watch next year, some Valley team breakthrough and show up here. But like, I don't know, it just feels like the next mid-major in air quotes that gets to Omaha is either going to be like an American team or a Big West team that like we look at and say, well, like, okay, but like really this is in baseball, these are like high mid-major type of programs, or it's going to be like Southern Miss or DBU that's been knocking on the door for so long. Like, and that just feels more like football to me. Maybe that's like basketball. Maybe that's just where I'm at mentally, but.
Part of the problem with the comparison too, right, is that it's more like basketball in that you can just straight up earn your way into it, right? Like Campbell wins a Big South tournament, they can't be denied. Whereas in football, it's a total committee structure. And so like, you're just as lower level teams, you're just never going to get a bite at the apple. Whereas in baseball, you by rule have to give those schools a chance to do it. So I think that's what makes it a hard comparison.
That's true. And, we've had plenty of teams show up in super regionals and just get outplayed or whatever, but that doesn't mean that somebody isn't going to turn a magical two weekends. But I do think there's a lot to be said for the fact that you have to win five games to get here. And most of those games that you're going to play, if you're a mid-major, are going to be against major conference schools. Like, you're probably only going to get to play one other mid-major. Like, that's probably the reality. You got to beat these powerhouse schools five times over the course of two weekends to get to Omaha. That's asking a lot. And I think that's what we've seen play out over the last 4 or 5 years now. All right, let's move on. Joe, another big talking point of this week has been how open this field is, or trying to pin down who a favorite might be. And I got to tell you, I don't think there is a favorite. Like, I suppose that, like, in a literal sense, somebody is the favorite here. But I don't see a favorite if I look at this field, really.
No, I don't either. And I think that's fun. Like, any of these eight teams winning the trophy in the end, there's going to be no shock here. Every year you go into Omaha and you're kind of like, even if there's not a mid-major, right? Like, you go into Omaha the year that Kent State and Stony Brook were there, and you're like, I would be shocked if those teams won the national title. But even in years with major conference teams, right? Like the year Washington was in Omaha, it's like, I would be shocked if that team won the national title. Or even good mid-major teams. Last year was Stanford. It was kind of like, maybe shocked is too strong, but with the way they were pitching last year, I would probably have been very surprised, if not shocked, if they'd won the national title. I don't really feel that way about any of these eight teams. And part of that is because we don't have juggernauts necessarily. We have questions about all eight of these teams. Like, we could have very real conversations about faults or weaknesses with these eight teams. So I think that's part of the conversation here. So I'm kind of leaning into it. I'm really enjoying the fact that we're not going in here trying to find ways in which, Tennessee, had they gotten here, or whomever, how you trip up that kind of team. But it does create a situation where, as you alluded to, I'm being asked a lot about like who the favorite is going to be or who should be considered the favorite. And, I think you can make an argument for a lot of teams, but that does seem to be kind of a, it's funny how as consumers, we just kind of want to compartmentalize things in our brains that way. Cause it is certainly the biggest talking point, I think, from at least just milling around today, that people is on the top of mind is who should I actually expect to win this thing? And I don't think there's a good answer or a bad answer, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, like, there are better answers, I think, than others, but like, I don't even, somebody asked me on radio today to line them up 1 through 8. And I was like, I just don't think there's that much separation between whoever I would put at number one and whoever I would put at number eight. Like, I'm pretty close to saying, like, you just put all eight names in a hat. I don't think it's quite like that. I do think Texas and Stanford
kind of stand out to me, or I really should say the winner of Texas and Notre Dame on Friday night and Stanford stand out to me. But like, look, Stanford's the highest seeded team here, but they got plenty of flaws. Their ace, Pac-12 pitcher of the year, Alex Williams, hasn't pitched particularly well in the NCAA tournament. And they, I don't think they can do this without him pitching better than he has to this point. Obviously Texas is very talented. They were the preseason number one team for a reason, but if they lose on in game one again, like they did a week ago, like are they battling out of the loser's bracket? Like, I don't know that they've got that in them. Maybe they do, but like, that's what tripped them up last year, is that they fell into the loser's bracket and couldn't get out. And I just think that's true of a lot of these teams. I can make cases for any of them, but if they fall into a loser's bracket, like I don't like any of their chances.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of in a situation where I'm trying to look at when the best version of these teams was on the field this season, whenever that was, what did I like there? Right. And so, you know, you can easily look at Texas in that way. Started 11-0, beat Tennessee to start their time at the tournament in Houston. You know, when that team has really been cooking, that, you know, they have been, they played as well as anybody outside of Tennessee has played this season. And yes, you can start to say, well, you know, but also not quite the same team. And it's like, well, true, but you know, in the 11-0 start, it's not like Tanner Witt had pitched in half of those games. So I get that, like, yes, they are not as strong as they were theoretically the first few weeks of the season, but like, they had a lot going for them before they lost Tanner Witt and have most of those pieces still, right? Like, I don't think
also, anybody, you know, who has the best ERA on that team? It's Lucas Gordon, Tanner Witt's replacement.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's obviously really there are like trickle down effects from that, but like the direct one for one replacement has been amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you never know too, like Lucas Gordon is a guy really got pushed into that role. And, you know, maybe he's a guy that ends up getting brought along slowly, and maybe they don't end up knowing exactly what they have if he doesn't get pushed into that role. So like you can kind of look at that in a couple of different ways. But the other team you talked about there is, I think, Stanford. And when they've been at their best, I mean, they can maul you offensively. And some of the guys, like I said, on one of these episodes we've recorded, which are all becoming a blur, the offense has gotten better, right? Remember back when Brock Jones was struggling, you know, question mark?
I do.
Like, those days seem like years ago.
Remember when, like, Tommy Troy was hitting like 180?
Yeah. Or when Drew Bowser was not hitting. Like, Drew Bowser has like 10 home runs in the last 15 minutes or something. Like, so the guys that were just like, we were waiting and waiting and waiting. And meanwhile, like Carter Graham and Brett Barrera and, you know, whoever else out there was really carrying the load, waiting for those guys to come along, and like, ta-da, they're here. And now, as time has gone on, you know, we've talked a lot about Stanford's pitching. As time has gone on, like, that has been a little bit of an adventure. So there is that. But like I said, when that team is playing at its best version of itself, like, that team has been really overwhelming too. So the two teams you kind of pointed out there early, I think, is right. For anybody else, it really kind of depends on how you value how they've been playing, right? Like, Notre Dame just had a really emotional super regional series win against Tennessee. Is that a springboard or is that an emotional letdown? Oklahoma has been playing really well. Like, does that magic run out or they keep it going? Like, you start to have to turn to like ethereal stuff like that once you get past that, because that's really what we're trying to do here with a bunch of teams that we're struggling to separate.
What if Ole Miss just doesn't lose another game? Like, what if they can't lose?
That would guarantee that Southern Miss would win the national title next year, because that's just the streak, you know, teams in the state of Mississippi. Or Jackson State, why not? So a different Mississippi team out there.
Mississippi Valley State.
Yeah, there you go. New head coach, new direction in that program.
Yeah, I mean, so like, I don't see a favorite here. If you see a favorite, like, that's fine, because I think you can make a case for any of them. But I just think that all eight of these teams are pretty well matched, and hopefully that means that the first weekend here is really good baseball. But I do also think that puts a lot of weight on these first 2 days, because advancing out of the bracket, if you don't win game one, it just becomes so much harder. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I, when Oregon State did it in 2018, like I remember seeing the numbers and they were quite terrible. So it would behoove everyone to get off to a strong start here on Friday and Saturday. We're going to get into those games here on a more granular level. There it is, in a second. But first, check this out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
All right, let's dive into this field here, and let's start on Friday afternoon. We have Oklahoma against Texas A&M. That happens at 2 o'clock Eastern. This is an interesting one, as you have Oklahoma coming in very hot, as you mentioned, Joe. They've run off a bunch of wins here over the last, you know, at least the last month, certainly, but it goes back longer ago than that, but certainly over the last month, you know, going down to Lubbock and winning a series at the end of the regular season, then winning the Big 12 tournament, and then winning a regional at Gainesville and going down to Blacksburg and winning a super regional there. They are coming in with plenty of momentum, with one of the better aces in Jake Bennett. And they're coming up against an A&M team that just has been really solid for the last few months. They win the SEC West. They kind of breeze through both regionals and super regionals. You know, Louisville certainly pushed them last weekend, but A&M did sweep that. And now they're here in Omaha for the first time under Jim Schlossnagel. And they're coming up against an opponent with plenty of momentum and probably the best team that they've played since the end of the SEC tournament. Sorry, Louisville. I think this is a great way to get the whole thing started.
Yeah, no doubt. We talked about in the super regional fun factor games, and this one strikes me as being that. It feels, you know, like a key in this one. It feels like for Oklahoma is kind of getting into the game and kind of trying to take it to A&M early. I think that'll be a positive for Jake Bennett if he's able to settle in, because that is really the big advantage I think Oklahoma has here, is they really do have a guy who's pitching well, who they get length from. If they can get him to really settle in, I think that's good. I also think A&M has proven to us time and again, they can win games where they have to go to the bullpen early and often, use a bunch of guys. Like, I get that, but you really can kind of put them in a tough spot if you can get them down early and really kind of bury them early. I think that's the kind of key there, because they are probably going to score some runs on you. Yes, they're going to keep throwing a bunch of arms at you. But can you put them in a deficit early that they just can't climb out of, especially with an Oklahoma offense where any offense can go cold? I get it. But what's the likelihood you're going to keep Oklahoma off the scoreboard a majority of the innings in the game? Like, I don't really love the chances of a team doing that. So it feels like if Oklahoma comes out playing really, really well here, I think that's the path forward for the Sooners in what I think should be, like you said, I think should be just a really fun game between two teams that I think have to look at this being here in Omaha and being able to get off to a good start here. Such an opportunity when you consider where these two teams came from, right? A&M in the big picture struggled so mightily last year. They completely reboot the roster in year one with Jim Schlossnagel, and here they are. And oh, by the way, had struggles during the season. Series lost to Yale, didn't look good in the early season tournament they played in Frisco. And then on the other side, Oklahoma too. I mean, they had their fair share of bumps in the road this year. We talked about them quite a bit early in the season as a team we just weren't sure about. And so these two teams had to feel like, man, this is such a big opportunity to get one step closer to winning a national title, which was not in the realm of any possibility that I figured going into this season, and even probably as late as, you know, mid-March or what have you.
Serious loss to Penn, not to Yale.
I'm sorry, Penn. Yes. I knew that. I just said the wrong Ivy League school.
I am interested here. Oklahoma is maybe the best running team in the field. You know, they want to run. Kendall Pettis can run. Peyton Graham can run. They have a lot of guys that are looking to get on base and run. Trey Clonch is very solid behind the plate. A&M has not allowed very many stolen bases this season, just 33 on the season. That's like half a stolen base a game, basically. I don't know if that can be a difference maker. I don't know if Oklahoma can test it and be successful. Like, that feels like it would be a difference maker. I don't know if it's a difference maker if A&M totally shuts Oklahoma down, though. Oklahoma does have the ability to be multiple offensively, but that is something that I'm looking at here is which team is better able to run, because A&M runs too, but also on the flip side, Jimmy Crooks for the Sooners is pretty adept at shutting things down behind the plate as well.
I think just quickly, you mentioned Peyton Graham's name. I think if Oklahoma can really acquit themselves well here, I think this is a real national, I mean, you and I don't need to know anymore. Like, we know what Peyton Graham is, but nationally for the casual audience, like, this could be a real announcement of who he is on a national stage. Cause it feels like this type of season he's had, even within college baseball circles, has gone a little bit under the radar. And, but every field he's been on here in the postseason, he's been seemingly so clearly the best player on the field with the way he's been playing. And so I think this is a real opportunity for a lot of people to get to know just what he's about ahead of the draft.
What I want to know is Kyler Murray going to show up in Omaha? Or...
Yeah, I think I saw some tweets to that effect. Like, I think he's expected. Now, people can say things on Twitter and then, like, logistics don't work out, whatever. But I think the expectation is that he will be.
That is that's cool. I know he was at the Big 12 tournament. Who is the A&M, like, super fan that would show here?
Johnny Football, is that is he still have a lot of cachet there? Is he someone they would?
I don't know if that's someone associated they would with celebrate. The brand? Showing up, you know, I don't know. That's they're an interesting one when you start trying to define that. But I would definitely welcome Kyler Murray coming. That would be the second straight year of an active NFL quarterback in Omaha, as Dak was, of course, here last year for Mississippi State. So Kyler Murray even more closely associated, given that he played for Oklahoma baseball. So that would be pretty cool if he's in the house tomorrow or anytime during the tournament. All right, let's go to the nightcap, Joe. That's Notre Dame and Texas. And for me, this is one of the best pitching matchups of maybe the pitching matchup of the opening round. You have John Michael Bertrand going for Notre Dame. You have Pete Hansen going for Texas. And, you know, I said that, you know, Texas could be considered a favorite if you're considering any of these teams a favorite, but, like, really, I think the favorite in this bracket is whoever wins this game. I think that, you know, both of these teams have plenty to make it through, but winning this game obviously puts you in a way more advantageous position. I just really like where both of these teams are at right now. And if you're Notre Dame and you can knock out Texas with Pete Hansen, you know, and then move on to a winner's bracket game, you know, neither A&M nor Oklahoma is going to be sending an arm as good as what you just beat out at you. And, you know, obviously the same is true for Texas as well. So I think this is the game of the opening round for me.
Yeah, I think it's a good one. I think it's also, I think David Pierce made this point in his press conference today, that it's a couple of lefties that are going to try to do things, you know, a similar way. Like neither is going to blow things by anybody. They're both going to have command of their arsenal. They're going to have to be pretty fine around the strike zone, especially because both of these offenses can put runs on you. And so that is kind of an interesting thing, is it's going to be who can execute a similar type of game plan better in the way they're going to pitch. So that is pretty fascinating. It's also, I think it'll also be a test on the Notre Dame side. I alluded to it earlier, but is that emotional win against Tennessee. There's so much going into that, and credit to Notre Dame and Link Jarrett for really leaning into it. Speaking of the press conferences, Link today, we were actually both sitting there when he said this, that, you know, we looked at that series last weekend and I didn't want to make too much of it, but at the same time, I wanted to be honest. And of course I'm paraphrasing here, that, you know, this is the biggest series, you know, probably in the season in college baseball, when you consider that it's, you know, Tennessee and everything that they've been this season and us trying to knock them off. And I think he's right. I mean, the shockwaves of that have reached far beyond college baseball. It seemed like everybody was tweeting about Notre Dame beating Tennessee last week, and even people that never tweet about college baseball. So that very much did resonate, and it was an emotional thing. And then, so, you know, the Notre Dame players have very much leaned into it. So is that a springboard? Will they be able to reset? Is it kind of a little bit of an emotional letdown? Nobody's going to, you know, everybody's going to say the right things about it, but that is something to watch here, is how does Notre Dame play coming off of something like that? It'll be very easy to kind of feel like hard to kind of to come off of that and have the same level of energy and fire, even if you're excited to be here, you understand how big it is, all of that kind of stuff. That can be sometimes a hard thing to bounce back from in a positive way.
I also feel like this is a little bit of the Spider-Man meme with them pointing at each other. You've got two elite defenses. You've got, as David Pierce said, left-handers that are not like flamethrowing lefties, two lefties that are, you know, the crafty lefty type, and two very veteran offenses. Notre Dame is older than any team. Like Texas is old, but they're definitely not on Notre Dame's level in terms of age, but they're both veteran offenses. You know, a significant difference anyway is the fact that one of them has Ivan Melendez. You know, Notre Dame doesn't really have anything to counter that. Notre Dame might want to run a little bit more than Texas, but there are an awful lot of similarities between these two teams. And, you know, they're going to have to beat each other at each other's games, really.
And one other quick note here is that this is not your father's Texas. They hit, you know, I'm looking at their stat page now. They hit 128 home runs, or they have hit 128 home runs. That, like, shatters the Texas program record, which, you know, under Augie Garrido, it was, you know, kind of a West Coast style small ball operation typically. And even the early Pierce teams were a little bit of that. But the point was made today that they would break that record even if Ivan Melendez hadn't played this year. So it's not just that, like, yes, okay, you've got a guy hit 32 home runs, like, you're going to break a program record. And they've got seven guys with 10 or more home runs in the lineup. You know, they've almost got, you know, Murphy Staley has almost 20 on the season. So, like, that's going to lead most teams. And it's just because he plays with Melendez that it's not. Like, we talked about this on the previous episodes. Like, everyone is really kind of, I think, waking up and looking at this Texas offense and saying, like, my goodness, like, this is an elite, elite offense. And it feels like it took a long time for everyone to look past Melendez, myself included. I'll just throw myself in there, to look past Melendez and realize the depth of what Texas is working with here.
I think that, you know, that there's still a perception that the ballpark formerly known as TD Ameritrade, now known as Charles Schwab, plays very big, that it's a pitcher's park, that you can't hit home runs here. There, I break it. Like I am prepared to exclusively report that there are going to be home runs hit, lots of them over the next 2 weeks. Like all kinds of ballparks across the country that you thought were pitcher's parks play much smaller than usual this year. Sunken Diamond, you know, Stanford hit 8 home runs in one game during Super Regionals against UConn. Texas is setting records at Dish Falk. Like there is no reason to think that the Chuck is going to play any differently than those kinds of parks. So just because Texas has, you know, been more reliant on the home run, or any of these teams have been more home run happy, like does not mean they're going to get here and suddenly have to change the way that they play. I don't think that is an advantage or disadvantage to anyone. You know, whether that's a good thing or not, you know, who knows, in terms of the game. So I think everyone though is probably going to be happy that we don't necessarily have to celebrate every single home run over the next 2 weeks as if it's this precious commodity. And shouldn't we be grateful that somebody was actually strong enough to hit the ball out of TD Ameritrade? Like it's going to happen, and there are going to be plenty of home runs. And some people probably are going to think there are too many home runs even. All right, let's move to Saturday's games. The other bracket is going to get started again at 2 Eastern. That one is Arkansas and Stanford. This is a rematch from earlier in the season. They played in week 2 at the Frisco College Classic. Stanford won that game. We'll see if this one's any different. I think this one has a very exciting pitching matchup as well, with Connor Nolan going against Alex Williams. Mentioned that Williams really needs to get back on track for Stanford to be at their best, but at his best, he was the Pac-12 pitcher of the year, and Connor Nolan has been incredibly steady all season long, especially so during the NCAA tournament. So expect this one. Well, I shouldn't say expect this to be well pitched, because again, Williams hasn't pitched very well of late, but this has the potential to be a very well pitched game. It also has the potential to be a very offensive game, because both of these teams can absolutely mash.
And also, you know, less relevant to this game, although kind of, because it's Nolan and Williams on the mound, but also again, two teams that really kind of feel similar, and you can take it a step further on the mound. Like these two teams are very predicated on getting something from that first guy, because after that, it's not just like question marks. It's also like very fluid. Like for Stanford, it's Quinn Matthews might start the second game. Quinn Matthews might also close the first game if they're winning. You know, with Arkansas, it's Hagan Smith could start a game, or he could come in and close, and Zach Morris might start a game, or he might come in relief. So these two teams really are looking at Nolan and Williams respectively and saying, hey, you gotta give us something, because it all starts with you. Like, and every the stage is set with what those guys do in the first game. So that's, in that way, they are similar offensively too. You're right. I mean, it's a couple of offenses that can really put up runs in bunches. I think advantage Stanford there. They've just been, we talked about it a minute or a little while ago. I mean, this team has been offensively at times lately just otherworldly in the way it continued over the weekend against, okay, yes, you know, UConn. Of the 16 teams that were in supers, one of the weakest, if not the weakest, but still.
No, I was told that pitching staff was elite.
That's it. Certainly, you know, the numbers suggested that they were, and Austin Peterson, you know, stuff wise is certainly in that mix, but it is UConn. But still, Stanford hit a bunch of home runs and, you know, really swung it well. Another good matchup here. It's really oversimplifying it, I would say, but the team that gets the guy on the mound who's able to slow down the other team's offense most effectively is early in the game is probably going to be who we're looking at here.
Yeah, I think it's a good point that, you know, both of these teams are going to sell out to win game one, because again, like it means an awful lot to win. So like, I think that you're not going to see Stanford holding Quinn Matthews unless they have, you know, a substantial lead. I think you'll see Hagan Smith if Arkansas doesn't have a substantial lead or, you know, is substantially behind. Like, I just think that both of these teams are going to go for it. They're going to hope that their starter
gives them length and is pitching well. But like, I fully expect to see those lefties come out of the pen tomorrow and not sit around and wait for game two. You know, the teams have changed massively since they played back in February. I don't think that really means a whole lot of anything, but I do think that probably gives Stanford some confidence. I don't know that they need it. They are the highest seeded team in the field, but they're certainly going to feel like they have the ability to go out and win, having already been this team. And on the flip side, maybe Arkansas is feeling a little bit like they have to go out and prove something, and they have a revenge spot here. I don't know how much that plays this time of year. All of these teams are very motivated, but that is a little bit of an interesting undercurrent to this game.
Certainly be a different meteorological situation. You may recall when they played in, I guess that was February, it was, as Dave Van Horn reminded us today, 35 degrees in Round Rock. And I actually remember listening to that game on the radio, and I forget which teams, maybe it was one of the earlier, I think it may have been the Raging Cajuns radio guy, because they were also in that field, like in a game earlier in that tournament, that, you know, they were, you know, had a heater under their radio desk, and they were like putting their, you know, sitting on their hands because they were that cold. So certainly, if you've looked at the forecast for Omaha this week, it will certainly be a different meteorological situation this time around.
If you have a heater in the dugout or in the radio booth this weekend, I think we can call someone to maybe institutionalize you, or at least like have a doctor like check out whatever is going on, because you do not need a heater here in Omaha. That is for sure.
And yet I will probably break out my lightweight hoodie in the press box.
100%. That's a separate issue.
It gets pretty chilly up there.
They run the AC very hard. It is the definition of first world problems for us. But the difference between the press box temperature and the outside temperature is massive. I don't mind. Like, I'd rather have the AC than not, though. So not here to complain about that one. All right, let's go to the nightcap. That is at 7 o'clock Eastern. It'll be Ole Miss and Auburn. Joe, do these teams have any history?
Probably so. Full disclosure, I just took a bite of guacamole, so my mouth is.
Joe thought he had 60 seconds at least as I introduced this, and he did not. So two SEC West teams going at it. And that was one thing that I guess was kind of missing from our discussion about how SEC heavy this is, because we kind of just swerved into how mid-majors don't make it to Omaha anymore. There are four teams from the SEC here. They are all from the West. So those teams know each other plenty. They all played each other this year, plenty. And you know, in this case, you have Ole Miss taking on Auburn. They met on the first weekend of SEC play on the Plains. Ole Miss won that series. At the time, you know, they won two out of three, and it was kind of a back and forth series. And at the time, I took that as a, like, is Ole Miss really as good as we thought they were, kind of thing. And now, I mean, you just have to realize, like, Auburn is a very, very good team. Like, it doesn't really matter that they lost to Middle Tennessee State in a series the weekend before. Auburn went on to have a very strong season, and they hosted for the first time in more than a decade. So plenty good. Obviously, they're led by Sonny DeShara, one of the top sluggers in the country. Ole Miss coming in, having pitched exceptionally well in Super Regionals, as we've alluded to, and you know, they've certainly got the offense to keep up with anyone. So I think this is a pretty intriguing matchup here on Saturday night.
Yeah, I think on the bigger SEC West thing, I think it does kind of show that, you know, we talked about this before, like the whole idea of iron sharpening iron. I think that it's, if you look at the SEC in general, you know, all of those teams, for the most part, you could pick out a couple of exceptions. All those teams, for the most part, have the talent to get to Omaha if things happen right? They get hot at the right time. They avoid injuries. They get a breakout year from this player or that player. Like, for the most part, most SEC teams, with just a couple of exceptions, in a given year have the talent to get to this stage. So I think that's definitely part of it. I just think it's also that in a year when we really struggled outside of Tennessee to kind of think of, like, who's good? Like, who do we really believe in? Like, that was a conversation all year, not just with you and I on this podcast, but every press box I was in all season was people saying like, yeah, it just feels like there aren't any great teams other than Tennessee. And in a year like that, I think talent rises to the top. Like talent kind of bails you out. Talent can patch over holes. Like talent can be lottery tickets, right? You throw a kid on the mound who hasn't pitched in a while or whatever else, and he comes through in a big spot because, well, this guy was a big recruit and yeah, it hasn't worked out here, but you know, he came up big for us in this moment, like that, all that kind of stuff. I think that's kind of what you end up with here is in this year when it's like, there was really nobody that you could bet on getting to the stage. The teams that just had that raw talent sitting around are the teams that kind of did it. Now, that's not to take anything away from them. I just think that's kind of what we ended up with here. So that's, I think it's part of what goes into that. And these two, Ole Miss and Auburn, pardon me, Ole Miss and Auburn.
Arkansas.
Yeah, that's right. That's actually the area of Omaha. I'm staying in Arkansas Village. That's a joke for people who know a little about the area of Omaha. Similar in that, you know, they both really went through some stuff on the mound. I mean, Auburn had that one. I kind of keep going back to it. And it's actually, I'm probably making a bigger deal of it than should be. But like they had the one weekend where, hey, I think it was the Tennessee weekend, right? Where Hayden Mullins gets injured and Blake Burkhalter kind of looks like he's tweaked something. And it turns out Burkhalter wasn't out that long and it was fine. But, you know, they lose Mullins and Burkhalter's maybe injured. It's like, oh God, like what are they going to do on the mound here? And like they bounce back from that and they didn't have Mullins, but Burkhalter returned and they found some pieces and the rest is history. And then of course we've detailed Ole Miss's transformation on the mound. So these two, if we're drawing the similarities between all these teams in the field, I mean, that's part of it for here, for these two teams here, is that they've really done a nice job of kind of working through some stuff and figuring out a combination that works. And when you're as talented as those two teams are, when you kind of find those right combinations, it can unlock something like this. And we've seen it with their postseason runs.
So we can get back to this game in a second, but a lot of people, I've heard a lot that like, there's this narrative that the SEC was down this year and like people are very upset about that. Her fans have been very upset about that through the last 2 weeks. Did we talk about that? Like, where is that coming from, this idea that the SEC was down? Like, I believe that it was out there in the ether, but like, why?
Well, I think, so it definitely was a thing that was out there, but I think it just kind of comes from the fact that we are used to, and I'm just kind of like spitballing this, and like, obviously I have no real like super hard and fast hypotheses about this. But I think what it comes from is the teams that we were really pegging at the beginning of the year to be where they are now took really circuitous routes to get there. So we had Ole Miss ranked really high. What happened. We kind of gave up on them. We had Vanderbilt ranked really high. That season didn't go as well as we thought it would, and they ultimately don't get here, so we kind of like gave up on them. You know, there are other examples as you know, Mississippi State, obviously. Like, the team wasn't as good as we thought they were going to be. A lot of good reasons for that. Some reasons we didn't anticipate. We gave up on them. Arkansas, like, they're kind of the opposite, where they kind of were just winning games, and we're like, is this team that good? Like, they just kind of keep winning games, and we're not really sure. So I think all of that kind of bled into – because A, it wasn't the teams we necessarily expected. And then B, there were teams that were kind of winning ugly and sticking around. I think the combination of those two things made for a perception that the SEC was down. Whereas if you'd have presented us, I think it's just kind of a perception thing. If you present us obviously a year where, yeah, you're going to get four SEC West teams in Omaha. Well, it must've been a great year in the SEC. And those are the facts. I just think because it wasn't the teams we expected necessarily, it has taken us basically, I guess we could argue, all season to really grapple with that. And instead, up until this point, we've just kind of been like, yeah, SEC must be down. If Auburn's doing this, it must mean the SEC is not very good. I think that's kind of where that has happened.
I mean, I know that after the first weekend of SEC play, I wrote that like the SEC West, the balance of power had shifted. But, and so clearly that was incorrect, but I didn't write that the SEC was down. I can't remember writing that. Like and obviously you and I are not the tastemakers or the trend makers of college baseball. There are plenty of other people talking about this out there, but I don't really know where that would have come from. I'm a little bit at a loss for it in this SEC centric sport.
like why anybody would ever have fallen into the trap of saying that the SEC is down. I guess like I hate to side with the people that are saying this, but like I feels like a thing just meant to discredit Tennessee. That the SEC is down, that's why they're ripping off all these wins, like whatever, I don't know. Anyway, that's not the point of this. I think, in this actual game, I just have no idea what to expect. Like Dylan DeLucia has pitched very well for throughout the whole second half of the season. Auburn in Corvallis got two outs out of Trace Bright before they went to the bullpen. Like, I have no clue. Like, all right, is this going to be a pitching game? Is this going to be an offense game? Like, is Auburn going to bullpen their way through this thing? Like, I have no idea how this one's going to go. And that makes it very interesting to me. I just think there's so many different ways that this could take so many paths they could take with this game.
Nope. I think that's right. I mean, I think that's people get into sports for a lot of different reasons. People cover sports for a lot of different reasons. And for some people it's witnessing greatness and, a triumph of the human spirit kind of stuff. For me, honestly, it's going to the ballpark and not having a clue what's going to happen on that given day. And like with that being kind of my reason for being, if you will, in being a baseball fan, being a college baseball fan, even more than that, because the variance is just so high in the sport. That given that backdrop, this CWS is, I think, going to be a whole heck of a lot of fun because I just don't have any clue what's going to happen. And I think that's absolutely fantastic.
Question on everyone's mind is, will Eli Manning be at this game?
No, I'm going to say no. He doesn't strike me as like, I could be wrong. I'd love to be wrong, but he doesn't strike me as a guy who's showing up at like, sporting events just because they're his alma mater.
I hope that I would love to see it. Love to see Arch. Love to see Archie. Whoever Manning's they want to throw our way, that'd be cool. But I just really hope like Kiffin shows because that's always a fun time.
Indeed.
It's too bad Tennessee couldn't be here for that. Then Lane Kiffin definitely would have showed, right?
he couldn't have helped himself.
So that is those are the first 2 days of this thing here in Omaha. Obviously from there, we'll progress with, winners and losers on Sunday and Monday, respectively. I don't know when Joe and I are going to come back here with another edition of the podcast. Like we are going to try and go twice a week. Like I keep saying that we go twice a week through the postseason. The change in format really is kind of messing with that because it used to be like, oh, well, we can just record again when we get to the one game days. Well, there are none of those. So Joe and I are going to have to huddle on that, and we'll figure out when we can come out with another edition of the Baseball America College podcast. But we'll be back here at some point next week to talk more about the College World Series. So make sure you are subscribed to the Baseball America podcast on your favorite podcasting app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. And then it'll pop right into your phone, no matter what schedule we end up going with here. Plenty over on the website as well. That's baseballamerica.com. We're on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Joe is at Joe Healy, BA. We're here for the next 2 weeks in Omaha. So plenty of insights, I hope, to come and plenty to read over at the website as well. Joe, we have just a few more minutes here. Do you have an Omaha recommendation for any folks that are rolling into town here?
So like the obvious thing would be to go with a food recommendation. I feel like I was really close to my microphone there. I apologize if that was loud. I will leave that to you. Because A, you're that's more of your area of expertise. And secondly, you've done a lot more of that than I have. I do a lot more like shameful, just like getting the same salad from the same salad place for like 4 days in a row kind of stuff. So, which I'm not proud of, but it just happens. So I will actually give it a little more of an offbeat recommendation. There's an apparel shop here in town. There's two locations. One is more like downtown. More is actually kind of over where I'm staying, over by UNO, Nebraska, Omaha, called Made in Omaha. I got a really cool pint glass from there last year that has like an etched like Omaha Landmarks design on it. So it's got the Henry Dorley Zoo, the dome. It's got the Bob Carey pedestrian bridge on it. It's got a couple of other Omaha things on it, but it's like an kind of an etched glass, pint glass, you know, those kinds that are like in the shape of a beer can kind of type. They had other designs. They were really great. They've got Omaha apparel. I got a great shirt from there last year that said Omaha, Nebraska, like home, you know, home of baseball. And it was the diagram of it couldn't say TD Ameritrade Park, which is what it was called at the time for, you know, copyright reasons, but that's clearly what it was. They just have kind of like different Omaha centric apparel and drinkware and glassware. And they've got some like local food options there. They sell, it's kind of a general store type of deal. I think it's a kind of a cool little store. It's if you're into like the whole shop local thing, it is very local, obviously. So that's my recommendation. It's called Made in Omaha. Like I said, two locations, one closer to downtown, one more a little bit further out west. I recommend it. Cool stuff there. Kind of offbeat stuff, especially if you're here with your family and like, you know, yes, you want the CWS Omaha shirts you get like at the stadium, but if you also want kind of a little different memento for maybe the people who aren't as baseball centric in your life that have dutifully come along with you to the College World Series, perhaps, that might be a good place to find something for them. So Made in Omaha.
That's a good one. That's definitely not one you hear very often. So, that is appreciated. I'm going to play the hits. My standard recommendations for anyone coming to Omaha are, in terms of food, are Kitchen Table and Block 16. They're both downtown. They're both just a little weird is the wrong word, but like you might consider them a little weird. They're a touch more on the hipster side of things, I suppose, if we're still using that phrase. Great food. Definitely can't go wrong with that. If you want steak, there are a million steakhouses. I am like definitely not the person to advise on steak. Everyone will tell you go to the Drover, and like I'm sure I will go to the Drover at some point this year, and it's everything you would want an old school Omaha steakhouse to be. But you also like don't have to go out that way. Like it's not downtown. If you're staying downtown, if you don't have a car, whatever, there are plenty of steakhouses downtown. Chop House, Monarch, there's one in the Marriott, whose name I can't remember, probably because I actually haven't been to that one. But don't feel like the experience at the Drover is like the classic College World Series, classic Omaha experience. But if you can't get out there, don't feel like you can't get a good steak. It is Omaha. There are plenty of places to do it. I think Monarch is a great spot. It is a little more on the upscale side, but I would probably endorse Monarch from that standpoint. So yeah, that's our brief Omaha guide. Hopefully you're enjoying it, whether you're here or you're watching on TV and hearing all of those great ESPN drops with the music. Again, we're excited about it. We're here for 2 weeks. We'll be back here with more on the Baseball America College podcast, on the website, on Twitter, on all the rest of it. So enjoy. This is a great time of year as we approach the crowning of a national champion and a dog pile at Charles Schwab Field over the next 2 weeks. So come along for the ride, and hopefully we'll get a great tournament here in Omaha this year. For Joe, I'm Teddy. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.